David Marinus is with us. He's in Washington, D.C., but he actually lives here. He says he lives here in Madison, you know, but I've never seen him around the streets or at the Jennifer Market or anything. We'll have to find out more about this. His last book was the Lombardi one, you know. I read that, and that was a great book. And this one is, he bit off something pretty big here to chew on. Barack Obama, the story. The story so far, actually. He just goes up to age 27. So we're left guessing as to what happens to him after that. David's on the line with us from my board here is not even working, by the way. Nothing's lighting up. So can you put David on? Is that, yes. David, are you there?
I am here, Michael, and just go to Victor Allen's on Monroe Street any morning when I'm out there and you'll find me.
Yes. David, you know Jim Packard died? I don't know if you know that, if you heard that part. And I know he would love to be saying hello to you right now.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, he's an old friend of yours as well. So.
Oh.
Yeah, so I know he wishes he were here to talk, to say hello anyway.
I'm sorry.
Thank you. Now, Barack Obama, I saw that the Hitler biography just came out. Are you kind of wishing at this point you would have gone with Hitler instead of Obama? A little easier subject, maybe?
I try to write only about people that I'm actually interested in.
Yeah. So you're not interested in Hitler?
I've had enough of that.
Had enough of that?
Yeah.
Been there, done that or something. I do want to say, if you ever write my biography,
yes.
And the odds are against it, let's face it. At this point, I could do something exceptional in the next few years, but it's got to be quick, you know. But if you do my bio, don't bother with the genealogy because it's a dead end. We go back as far as somewhere around Kiev, and there's no records beyond that.
How about the girlfriends and the...
don't ask about the old girlfriends or the pot use in college, okay?
Okay.
Then we got a deal. I'll sign off on it in advance. This book is maybe the most unusual biography I've read, in that it is sort of like Tristan Shandy. Someone said that, you know, where he goes back to his own birth and all that,
right?
And describes it and stuff. Well, the form of it. How did you come up with it?
Well, you know, it's just the genre is called biography, but I didn't think of it in those terms. No. I came up with a book that I wanted to write, which is the world that created Barack Obama and then how he remade himself. Because he is such a product of the modern world from all of its different aspects, and that's what obsessed me from the beginning, and that's why I approached the book that way.
And do you feel that you know him any better after doing all his research and all his background than you did when you started?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I understand him now, and I hope that even though the book ends when he's 27, that people who read it will understand why he does what he does as president.
I'm not trying to be critical of the book or anything, but I didn't so much get that from the book. What I got from the book was that at one point you say, well, this is this guy who invented himself, you know, and obviously that's just a short answer, you know, but in a sense it's also true because so much of it was self, because he had to be self-inventive due to his circumstances. He had a mother that didn't particularly direct him. He had a father who was totally absent.
Well, his father was never there. I disagree with you about his mother. I mean, she wasn't always there herself. When he was an adolescent and teenager, she was in Indonesia and he was in Honolulu. But her conscience is deeply imprinted on everything that he does. So I think she did influence him.
Oh, no, I think that's true. But in terms of, you know, his actions, they were separated for quite a few years and stuff, and he sort of raised himself to a large extent, with the grandparents, I think.
Yes, he lived with his grandparents. He compared them, for any of your people there who watch Mad Men, he compared his grandmother, Madeline Dunham, to Peggy on Mad Men. She started as a secretary in a bank and finished as a vice president. And then he said, and she and his grandfather did all that smoking and drinking and stuff, which is sort of a Mad Men thing. But his grandmother was very pragmatic and had that aspect of him imprinted on him as well.
Yeah. Mercer Island, that's where she grew up, basically, at the moment, right?
Well, she went to high school in Mercer Island near Seattle, right?
Right. Which, you know, and I don't quite get some of the things here, but it looks like a miniature Africa. Is that supposed to be foreshadowing? You said it's shaped like a miniature Africa, Mercer Island.
I just looked at I don't know where you're going here, Michael, but yes. I mean, if you look at Mercer Island, it looks like Africa.
But is that intended to be a little foreshadowing that she will someday meet an African student?
I just wrote it for fun. You can take it however you want.
But there's quite a bit of that in this book there, you know, because you flip forward from, I don't know, the Crimean War to, you know, to Chicago ward politics, which are very close, actually, if you think about it.
They are the same thing.
Yeah, they are the same thing. So there's quite a bit of that in the book where you're kind of like foreshadowing.
Well, there's a little bit of that,
little
yes.
Bit. Quite a bit, actually.
Okay, quite a bit.
Quite a bit of it, yes. And then the you know, Barack Obama Sr., or the first, I guess it would be, he's like the foreign student from hell.
Well, he was a difficult man, and one of the conclusions I reach after studying him so thoroughly is that the president was lucky that he never lived with him.
Yeah.
Yeah,
right.
He was an alcoholic and abusive physically.
Right. And his mother, too, because he was a wife beater, among other things.
Yes, absolutely.
And a multiple marrier. When he married...
Well, that's part of the Luo culture. Yeah. You know, he's from Kenya, the Luo tribe, and they historically have been polygamists.
Yeah, okay. And he came here on the Jackie Robinson Chock Full of Nuts scholarship?
The first wave of Kenyans, Africans to come to the United States to be trained really in preparation for independence, yeah.
Yeah. And he was supposed to be quite a remarkably intelligent man and very outgoing, gregarious, and so forth, but totally wasted all those talents, basically, in his life. He became an alcoholic. He was
in and out of the government in Kenya until he died at an early age in a traffic accident, which seemed sort of inevitable because he was constantly drinking and driving. But, yes, he was a brilliant man who never lived up to his potential because of his own personal demons.
Okay. And his mother, Stanley, actually, her name was Stanley, right? Stanley Ann?
Stanley Ann. Yeah. And people assume that she was named after her father, whose name was Stanley. Mm-hmm. But, in fact, she was named after a character played by Betty Davis in a movie who was named Stanley, a woman, who was not a particularly likable character in the movie, but Madeline Dunham, Stanley's mother, loved Betty Davis and emulated her.
How did they end up in Hawaii, I guess, is a good question.
Well, they were, Stan Dunham, the father, was, I liken him to a Willie Loman character. He was constantly on the move and had big dreams that he could never fulfill. And part of that carried him further west from Kansas to suburban Seattle to Hawaii. He was a furniture salesman when he got there.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so he brought the family down to Hawaii.
And she was 17 years old, the daughter, and met Barack Obama Sr. in a Russian class in her freshman year when she was 17.
17. And within a year, she was pregnant and married.
Yep. Well, within a year, she was pregnant, and they did get married. And Barack Obama was indeed born in Honolulu, but they never really had much of a marriage. They never lived together.
Yeah, because he left. And then he actually took up with another woman and married her as well.
Another American, and she went to Kenya with him.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. Okay. All the background on this, if that sounds interesting to you, which it is, it's all in here, basically. But you also go back into tribal culture in Kenya because is it good to know this so you understand the father a little more? Is that what the thinking is on the Kenyan part of the story?
You decide that for yourself, Mike. You sound hostile about this.
I'm really not.
I'm fascinated by it.
I am too. I am sort of hostile about the father, actually, when I read it.
Well, that's a fine conclusion to reach.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because, you know, I'd never really known about him. Because it's funny, because, you know, the memoir was Dreams from My Father.
Yes, but really, you know, he didn't know his father at all. It's a vacuum in his life.
Right.
And his memoir, which I think is really well written, is essentially, you know, shaped through the lens of race. And so everything in it goes through that notion. And so he makes his father a bigger character than he really was in his life.
Right. So he invented his father and himself, basically.
Yeah, well, in a sense, that's true. There's a lot of mythology about the family that I deal with in the book.
Yeah. And even in the memoir itself, a lot, it's kind of a unauthorized autobiography.
Well, he acknowledges in his introduction that there are composite characters and compressed action. And,
right.
You know, without making a huge deal out of it, which the right wing is now trying to do,
right.
And, I'm just trying to be a serious historian and get the story right.
Yeah.
When I first, when I interviewed him in the White House, I let him read the introduction first, and when we started to talk, he said, David, you called my book fiction. And I said, no, Mr. President, I complimented you. I called it literature, which it is. And there's, you know, there's a big difference between writing biography and writing a memoir, and I understand and accept that.
Yeah.
But the, you know, the beginning of our conversation was not about that at all. It was about the Packers and the Bears.
Yeah. Yeah.
For all of you Packer fans out there, when I got into the White House, remembering that game 2 years ago between the Bears and the Packers to decide the NFC Championship,
right.
Obama said he'd go to the Super Bowl if the Bears won,
right.
And then Woodson got on a table afterwards and said, the president isn't coming to see us, we'll go see him in the White House.
Mm-hmm.
So I walked into the Oval Office and said, Mr. President, Charles Woodson got here before me, but I'm glad we both finally made it. And he said, well, man, those Packers were rough on me. And I said, well, deservedly so. You're a Bears fan. And he said, well, every time I come to Green Bay, they give me another share of Packer stock. And I said, well, I guess they'll do that for anybody.
Yeah. Tell him it's non-voting. So, you know. He's got another voting problem there. If that,
yeah, that's right.
Okay, compare and contrast Lombardi and Obama.
Go ahead. Well,
you know them both.
Both winners, both obsessed with, both with very strong will. You know, Lombardi was great at making a family out of strangers, and Obama, basically, his life was a search for a family, which he found with Michelle, and finally in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. And you know what comes out of all this, I guess, is I don't know, but lots of things do, but one thing is what an extraordinary individual he is. Despite all that he went
through.
Yeah,
well,
through
I mean, a lot, you know, the heart of the heart of the last third of the book is about him trying to figure himself out.
Right.
And he really does. And I can compare contrast that with Bill Clinton, the other subject of one of my biographies, who basically just plowed through life reinventing himself every day and forgiving himself and not really trying to deal with the dysfunction and contradictions in his own self. And that got him to the White House. He's a preternatural survivor who needs people and always can figure a way out of things. But it also got him in trouble in the White House and got him out of trouble again because he's such a good survivor. Obama's the opposite. He came out of dysfunction too, but spent 10 years really trying to resolve those contradictions. And he was pretty good at it. And it got him to the White House. And then, you know, in the dysfunctional politics of today, it sort of was didn't really help him that much when he became president.
Yeah. But with Clinton, though, I mean, kids in grade school probably knew he was going to go into politics.
Oh, totally. Yeah,
and it was Arkansas anyway, you know, and everyone is a politician in Arkansas, it seems.
Yeah, well, he ran for office so much in high school that the principal finally came to him and said he couldn't run anymore. And he had to run for class secretary, which he did, and then a girl in the class beat him, and he wouldn't talk to her again.
Yeah. But in looking at Barack Obama, I mean, you look for clues as to when he started to think politically, and you don't...
They don't come up in high school.
No.
They don't come up in college. You see in college at Occidental and Columbia the first inklings of his sense of destiny. But it wasn't really until he got to Chicago and worked as a community organizer that he saw different forms of power and what it would take for him to really try to change things, and that was electoral politics.
Right. In high school, it was all pot and basketball, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. You know, in his memoir, he says that he didn't start on his high school team because he played black and the coach was a conservative white guy, which I guess Wisconsin people can identify with. But in fact, he was the one guy on the team who couldn't dunk.
Yeah. That's right. And he can only move to his left, as I understand.
He can only drive to his left. Only and it was an excellent basketball team.
So there was an inkling. That's the only inkling we have, is that he could just drive to his left.
Well, he is left-handed, Michael.
Okay. There's that.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm trying to make, you can do the foreshadowing, but I can't. Is that what you're saying? this is quite amazing. So the politics thing really started in Chicago. Harold Washington was elected mayor, and that brought him to town.
Yeah, he was, within 6 months of one another, three people came to Chicago in 1985, and it was first Oprah Winfrey, then Michael Jordan, and then Barack Obama. And, of course, everybody knew the first two within a year, and Obama was utterly anonymous. The only person in the city who knew him was his great uncle.
But he had a kind of a procedural problem, because Chicago was hot-blooded, two-fisted. I remember in Washington, I was down there actually during the Washington administration, when the aldermen were on top of their desks.
Yeah,
they were on top of their desks.
Oh, it was vicious. But, you know, Obama's
yelling
life has
screaming.
Been really sort of an ability to avoid traps. And one of the traps he avoided was never running for the city council, which is a much bigger job than being in the state legislature. But he went down to Springfield and avoided much of that Chicago stuff.
Yeah, that was a good idea.
It was politically a brilliant stroke.
Yeah, because it didn't. Reverend Love was that was really kind of his minister more than this other guy. Wright,
more than Reverend Wright, who became notorious later. Yeah.
But I remember Reverend Love in the book says, "I wish he would get angry once in a while or start pounding."
Well, that was one of the things that you could see as a community organizer that Barack Obama's temperament was not really that of an angry, confrontational sort, which organizers sometimes need to be. He was always trying to bring people together and not getting angry. And you can see that in his presidency and many of his supporters wishing that he would be a little more outspoken about the things he believes in and go at the Republicans more.
Have you ever seen Key and Peele on the Comedy Channel?
I'm sorry, tell me.
The two comedians? They do an angry Obama thing. They do one where one guy is actually playing Obama, and his other friend is standing up, and he's translating it into anger.
Uh-huh.
And he gets incredibly, the regular Obama will make a statement, and then the standing angry Obama
will translate what he really meant.
Will do it angry, angry, fist-pumping, screaming angry.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. But it's sort of based on this premise. People sort of expect that once in a while he's going to.
Yeah, well, you know, there is an unfortunate racial aspect to that, which is an angry black man doesn't necessarily play well in parts of our country. But Obama was, you know, even when he was on the south side of Chicago, which is predominantly black, he had the same personality, so it wasn't just a racial thing.
Yeah. Here's a man who thinks and his judgments are temperate. He's very intelligent, obviously, but he thinks about what he does it for. Is that hampered his effectiveness in the presidency?
Well, I mean, there are times when it appears it does. Yes. You know, he's very deliberative, and that can sometimes anger his supporters. But when you look at certain things, like the first 2 years of his presidency, the gay community was pounding on him. Why aren't you acting? You promised you'd get rid of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And it took him 2 years, but he did it. And he did it in a way that got the military to go along. So often when he appears to be behind the times or whatever, he's just trying to figure out the most effective way of getting something done.
Yeah. And does he?
Sometimes yes, and sometimes it's impossible.
Yeah, right.
Or he doesn't.
Right.
He's not perfect, but that's what he's trying to do.
Yeah. Interesting. I was struck by one short phrase, two-word phrase in the book, utterly alone.
Uh-huh.
With his self-characterization.
Yeah, well, you know, he grew up pretty much alone. That's very true. I mean, without a father and with his mother off and gone. And you know, even as wonderful as his grandfather was doting, if a little bit strange, and his grandmother was very pragmatic, but was a closet alcoholic, which he acknowledged to me. So you can imagine growing up biracial in a white family with your mother gone and your father not there and all of that, he was pretty much alone.
Yeah. And the book only goes up to age 27, which is when he started Harvard?
The book ends with him driving up to Harvard. And by that time, what obsessed me, I'd resolved, which was how he figured himself out personally in finding Chicago and home at last, and also how he figured out what he wanted to do with his sense of destiny, which was politics. He had all that figured out. He drives up to Harvard to get the bona fides to start that life.
Yeah. But when you think about it, how improbable is that, though? I mean, now here's...
Well, everything in his life is improbable.
I know.
Utterly.
But becoming president, you know, if I, you know, was within 3 years, I told you I was going to be president of the United States, that would sound improbable to you, wouldn't it?
Well, I don't know. What's your audience say?
I don't know. But all right, it really is incredibly improbable because here he's 1996, elected to the state senate in Illinois, the state senate.
Oh, Completely. And year 2000, I mean, I've done a lot of reporting for the second volume of this book, but when you think about it, only in the year 2000, he went out to the Democratic Convention in Los Angeles, and nobody knew him, and his credit card bounced, and he had to go back home. And then 8 years, you know, 6 years later, 7 years later, he's announcing for president, and 8 years later, he's president of the United States. It's extraordinary.
How is that even possible? I mean, you know, if I were just looking at this in the book, I would.
Well, it was
give you
a
blue pencil on this
timing
one.
And self-confidence and the nation being ready for it.
Yeah. But I mean, if you were just seeing that in, let's say, in a novel or something, you knew nothing about, wouldn't you blue pencil that and say?
Probably so.
Put something
probably
in here.
So. The other thing to remember is that our culture has changed so much in terms of what time feels like.
Yeah.
You know, that a year is like 10 years used to be, and a minute is an hour, and, you know, everything is just exponentially quicker now, including how people can change and become national figures.
Yeah. But, you know, I would say, David, I mean, even at this point, I think people, you know, like or dislike him, I guess, or hate him even, Obama, for what they sense he is like, for what they see glimpses of him being, and that's very attractive and seems very, you know, really remarkable. But you just see that in glimpses, sort of, and he needs to bring that out more, I guess, so we can really understand where some of this is coming from.
Well, he is reserved. He, you know, in Hawaii there was a saying, cool head main thing, and he's a cool guy in that sense. And
he's still doing the Chum thing, the Chum gang thing, is that what you're saying?
Well, if he is, I don't know.
Yeah. I don't mean the smoking, but I mean the sort of the attitude about
yeah.
that.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. That's part of it.
Yeah.
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 You know, everybody has advice for what he should do, and he is what he is.
I'm not really trying to give him advice or anyone advice.
Yeah,
I'm
okay.
The last guy to do it. And if I give you any, don't take it. Promise
All right,
me
got
that.
Got it.
Promise me. But I would say, you know, the one thing about JFK, and he was only in 3 years, but when he did those press conferences, you got such a sense of the man and how he thought and how well he spoke and how well he thought, you know, and what he felt strongly about, and it was beautiful, you know. And that was so important for, you know, that's how you got to know.
That defined him, right.
You know, to see JFK.
Yeah.
And Barack Obama does not do that with press conferences, and needs to, if I were giving advice, I would say somehow get across more to people, have a fireside chat or something. I don't know, maybe that wouldn't work either.
Well, there's a lot of things that used to work that don't work anymore.
Yeah.
But obviously, his staff's trying to figure that out, what the best way is to connect.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm just trying to explain him. I'm just trying to tell him what to do.
No, I know that. Except for the football thing.
Except for the football
thing.
Yeah,
the football thing.
But I'm never going to make him a Packer fan.
You got to do that. Well, the book is Barack Obama. This is the story, part one, right?
Yes, it is.
Part one. Part two coming up.
And I look forward, it'll take a while. I don't want to do a quickie, but it will come. And I'll be out in Madison in 10 days.
Okay,
I'll
look for you.
Can't wait to get there.
I'm going to look for you, man.
All right.
This time I'm going to see you on the street, David Marinus.
Thank
you. Thanks
so
much.
Thank you, Michael.
Nice talking to you, as always.
Okay.
Barack Obama, David Marinus, ladies and gentlemen. It's not working.